It's the Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis. The Democrat majority in the state Senate passed a bill that would create an income tax. It now heads to the House. All Senate Republicans voted against the measure.
Well, we don't want to. We don't know the motives of each individual member, whether they vote yes or no. We do know that this bill, if it passes, if the emergency clause, for example, is put back on in the other body, and if the people don't get a chance to vote for it on a referendum or initiative, or amazingly, if they were to affirm the vote, this bill on a vote, we know that there is going to be one result of all this if it actually is enacted into law, and that is a court challenge. A court challenge that in all probability will end up before our state Supreme Court. It will create a test case that could give the Supreme Court the opportunity to either overturn or affirm one of the most important rulings it ever made. And that's the ruling back in 1933 that a graduated income tax requires an amendment to the state constitution. The issue is that our state constitution clearly defines income to be property. An earlier constitutional amendment approved by the legislature and the people defines property to be everything tangible and intangible subject to ownership. It is one of the strongest definitions in the country, written in plain English. It encompasses income because income is an intangible thing that we own. So a tax on income becomes a tax on property. That makes it subject to other provisions of the state constitution that require all property to be taxed at the same rate, and limiting the rate of taxation. So you could have an income tax if it was a flat rate, but you cannot have a graduated income tax unless you want to change the Constitution. The court has stuck to that reasoning time and time again. And in some of its opinion, it seems to be saying, please stop asking the question. The question is settled. The only way to settle the question again is to take a vote of the people and have them amend the Constitution, and then you would know for sure that this would pass constitutional muster. The people have been asked 10 times since 1934. Every time they have said no. But only 6 of those times did this involve a constitutional amendment. 4 of those times they have been income taxes that have been challenged exactly the way this will be challenged should it be enacted into law. The last one, Initiative 1098, was the most significant because it's the most recent one, and it came after all those earlier rulings that seemed to say, don't try again. Initiative 1098 failed in 2010, by a 64-36 margin. In my 4th legislative district, it was a 73.7% no. Spokane County was 70%. So it was pretty overwhelming. So let's think of it this way. In 2010, the I-1098 vote would have been, or I should put it this way, the vote today, if we followed the results of the 1098, would be 5 votes for, 44 votes against. That's the way the districts voted. And of course, the 5 pro votes were all from the city of Seattle. Strongly urging a no vote on this, perhaps the most consequential vote of the session.
I rise in opposition to this bill. I think we need to look at the history. I don't think any of us are as old as the legislature's fight against an income tax. Legislatures in Washington have been trying to imposed an income tax since 1934, and the voters in the state have been rejecting it every time. So this has been happening since before we all were born. I had a brief conversation with one of my accountants from my area last night. She asked what we were working on. And I said, the capital gains tax. And she says, you know, capital gains is an excise tax, which is an income tax. And it's unconstitutional. And I said, yes, I know that. But what a lot of our constituents, I think, are afraid of is this is just the beginning of more taxation. Yes, we had a long hearing, but we heard a lot of opposition. 95% of my emails are in opposition because people think it's an income tax. People think it's going to get to them as well. The last speaker talked about someone from her district that wants to pay more. There's nothing prohibiting her from paying more taxes. There are forms available on, I'm sure, revenue sites that she could go and she could pay more percentage of her income if she would like to donate to the state of Washington. Nothing is prohibiting that right now. We also heard that people, they might leave the state if this passes. I spoke to a constituent just two nights ago. He is planning to leave the state. He is one of the very high income, high wealth people in my district. He is disposing of his assets in preparation to leave this state. And it's not a joke. It's not, I'm going to, if he is leaving the state because of what's happening with the taxation systems. He is a second generation manufacturing business owner, very wealthy in consideration of a lot of my constituents in my district. He's not going to hand it off to his kids because of what's being talked about today. And he does donate. That's why I was very disappointed that we weren't able to hang some of those amendments. But because this particular constituent wants to make his wealth work for the communities, and he has, he really has. So I think this tax will be very volatile if we're going to fit just the top earners. Last time this was rejected 10 years ago, the last rejection was in 44 of our legislative districts rejected it. I think we need to learn to listen to our constituents. Washington does have an increased revenue. We need to vote no on this bill today.
I rise to speak against this tax, Senate Bill 5096. And Mr. President, the reason why is because I truly feel that this income tax on capital gains is really just a starter tax that will most likely lead to a broader income tax in this state. One of the reasons why is because it's a very volatile tax, Mr. President. We just heard that we were estimating that it would generate $500 million annually for some very important programs. But this is a tax on the capital gains earned by investments right now. Well, in a down market, Mr. President, nobody sells. We saw what happened last year when our economy began to crash after session started. There were a lot of bills passed based on anticipated increases in state revenue. And then all of a sudden, we hit a recession. Businesses closed, Mr. President. Tax revenues don't come in. It was a scramble to try to find ways to plug holes that we had thought we had anticipated tax revenue for to move forward with these very, very important projects, Mr. President. You know, we can look at California and how they have fared with this. Some people think California is a model for the country. And according to a single, completely untrustworthy study that calls our tax system here one of the worst in the nation, says that California has one of the best tax systems in the nation. Well, last year, California had the biggest shortfall in history, $54 billion. And there were reasons for that. Almost every state experienced shortfalls, as we had anticipated shortfalls. The coronavirus shutdown was huge. Another, because of that, was the stock market collapsing. However, the biggest reason why California went down is because of their reliance on taxes like this one. Mr. President, if I may, could I read a short quote, please?
Please proceed.
Thank you very much, sir. This is from the LA Times. It says, and this is from current California Governor Gavin Newsom. He was explaining why California's problems were so much worse than the rest of the country. And I quote, "The reality is that we're in a state that is overly reliant on capital gains," Newsom says. "As a result, the volatility of tax receipts will be acute." Well, obviously, again, I just spoke to that. Anticipated revenue will get you in trouble every time. We are anticipating that this will be a steady stream of revenue based on probably a strong economy, based on the fact if it is on assets that are sold like stocks, based on the fact that these gains are consistent year in and year out, which I do not believe they will be. Another problem that I see with it is we talked about the 9,000 people that it's going to affect out of, I think it was 3 million we have in the state. I'm not sure what the number is. But of that, Mr. President, those 9,000 people may be the ultra wealthy, but what I see this doing to us is middle class too. I said that I thought this was a starter income tax. I believe that it is. If we don't get steady tax revenues from it, we have to look for other funding sources for these most important programs that we're supposed to be funding with this, sir. I'm classified easily as middle class, as all of us. But I want to tell you what a capital gains tax did to us, Mr. President. When my father-in-law got out of the war in the 1940s, he bought a piece of ground just north of Pasco, Washington in Franklin County on his way back to the farm in Walla Walla County. 40 years later, he was able to develop that ground, drill wells, put center pivots on it, grow crops to feed the people of this nation. 15 years later, Mr. President, Pasco's growth took off. The Tri-Cities growth took off. Great economic development. Thanks to the Growth Management Act, that's really a bad thing to say, but that ground was included in the growth management or in the urban growth area. Eventually, Pasco wanted to grow into that area. My father-in-law, unfortunately, never saw his dream come true as I took over his business 30 years ago. At that point, we chose to sell the property. So this is on the gains made of an asset at the point of sale. Now, we are not millionaires. When we sold the property, our basis, Mr. President, was $4 an acre. When that land was developed, it was way more than that. Obviously, there wasn't a state capital gains tax, but there was a federal capital gains tax. And I spoke of this earlier. So each time we received a payment, Mr. President, there was a deduction to pay taxes on that. There was capital gains, and then the remainder of that revenue was treated as ordinary income. We were paying as high as 40% every time we received the payment, Mr. President. 40%. That's an awful lot to lose each time due to taxes. And it wasn't the fault of us that something appreciated. It was good foresight by my father-in-law to invest into something that would have a return. And now we aren't getting it. That's why I say this is a lead-in to take away from the middle class, the people it hurts the most. Mr. President, as I said before, I'm middle class. I don't even come close to grossing $1 million a year. However, my wife and I bought our first piece of property 35 years ago. We still have it. As things appreciate, what's going to happen with us? There's nothing left to give to the kids. We'll just keep paying taxes to the government, Mr. President. This is a bad class. It does hit the middle. This is a bad tax. It does hit the middle class.
So I am sitting and I'm listening to my colleagues talk about how this is on the 1%, on the uber wealthy, and it's going to take care of the most underprivileged among us. And the only thing that keeps running through my head is, for now, right up until it doesn't, Mr. President, we know that there are some among us who see this because of the challenge that we put up here today. We know that there are some among us who would like to see the Supreme Court pick this up and to say, nope, uniformity clause, pish posh, doesn't matter anymore. And when that happens, Mr. President, then we will all have an income tax. You know, my family lives in Michigan, and I'll never forget, it was something very much like this. And my mother said, you know, the rules are the rules, right up until they're not the rules anymore. So when a temporary increase in the income tax was due to happen, I'd say, Mom, it's temporary. They're going to roll it back. And she'd look at me like, you're not my daughter if you really believe that. So I think that there are many of us who are looking down the road, a far piece. There are many of us who understand the ultimate goal, which is a statewide income tax. And you know what, Mr. President? 10 times the people of this state have recognized it too. Now, don't misunderstand me. There are 4 senators in this chamber whose constituency is just hunky-dory with an income tax. And you know what? They are representing their constituency here today, and God bless them for that, because they're doing their job. But you know what, Mr. President? On the map, my district is always a deep, dark red of, no, we don't want this. And so my mandate, just like theirs, is clear. You know, we often are in a position where we make decisions on the fly about what we think is best for the people that we represent. But sometimes we don't have to think too hard because they're constantly telling us. And this is an issue, Mr. President, that crosses party lines. My mandate is clear that I'm to protect my constituency from an income tax. And that's what I'm doing here today. By expressing my concern, by trying to make an amendment that would protect the very investments that the wealthy make in what is oftentimes our social safety net through our nonprofits. We were told that that's already in the bill, so I checked when we were on break, and indeed, Mr. President, it is not. So I think that my concern overall is that the people have spoken time and again, and this tone deafness has become painful. We want to rely on the most volatile tax that there is to provide the most important services. So then, when the volatility shows itself for what it really is, and no money comes in, where do the cuts come? To the very vulnerable people that we said we would be protecting with the income, with the revenue. And that is why I say to my good colleagues who are representing the interests of their constituents to the best of their ability, for now, yep, we're going to take care of the vulnerable right up until we're not. We can do better than this. We're sitting on what, $7 to $10 billion extra dollars right now. With wise investments in that money, Mr. President, we don't need an income tax. Not on capital gains, and not on the middle class of Washington State. You know, I want to get back to Michigan for a moment. They started off on tax just on the rich, very similar to this. But you know what happened today? If you pull a check for a social program, they take Michigan State income tax out of that check. So they even tax with an income tax the people who they said they wanted to help by instituting an income tax. And you know what? We can learn from that lesson. It's also the same in New York State. We don't have to make those mistakes. We have a booming and thriving economy, Mr. President, because of good choices that we've made. It is clear to me that this is a mandate. It is clear to me that this, there's a hope that this will go to the Supreme Court, that the uniformity clause will be thrown out, and then the income tax will fall to all of us with a simple majority. It's as clear as the nose on my face. It's also as clear as the noses on my constituents' face, be they Democrat or Republican. So I rise in opposition today to point out that we're better than this, and we need to listen to the people that we represent.
Earlier today, I shared with the members a couple of pieces of information that explain the myth of the excise tax. I'd like to talk about some of the other myths of this tax. One is, it's only $250,000, it's only 7%, it's only 1%. For the older members or their parents, they can remember where sales tax used to be, where it started at, where B&O was. Mr. President, they also remember life without all of the local option taxes, much like this body rejected prohibition on this one. If we look at some of the senior members, you hear these vague claims that, well, it's going to fund good stuff. Well, Mr. President, the vagueness of this reminds me of the lottery will fund education. Mr. President, we were told not that many years ago that the death tax would certainly fund education. We created an education legacy account. Clearly that didn't work. We've been back to the well for more and more money. We've been told by people as long as I can remember how regressive our tax code is and how we need to correct it. But Mr. President, when we were in Ways and Means, no one would accept amendments that might lower the sales tax, might lower excise taxes on cars, might consider other low-income tax relief. Even a pure dedication was rejected. Mr. President, one of the other myths I'm hearing is that the super rich are saying, tax me more. Well, Mr. President, they supported the last income tax. They supported the death tax. But it really doesn't matter. If you have enough money, enough lawyers, you can create trusts, foundations, or other shelters that you really won't pay this mythical tax. Mr. President, in 1992, I chose to run for the legislature. Without the help of a focus group or surveys or consultants, I came up to this conclusion. a state income tax? Never. And Mr. President, I meant it.
Much has already been said, and I'll try not to repeat. You know, we know that by every definition available, this is an income tax. We know it's likely headed to the Supreme Court. We know that there's a longstanding precedent that would have to be overruled to make a graduated income tax constitutional in our state. We know there's been 10 times the voters have said no to an income tax. We know this isn't reform. You know, Mr. President, if you talk about tax reform, it means some give and take. It means we think this tax is more fair, and we think this other tax is less fair, and we're going to reduce it. But there's no reductions in the bill here today, Mr. President. None. We know this bill doesn't treat everybody equally, and we know it doesn't just go after the 1%. I'll provide a comparison for you, Mr. President. We have thousands of dedicated public servants in our state. They will retire with pensions that actuarially are probably, you know, I've had this looked at before, and they're in the $1 million to $2 million range in terms of value, meaning if you could take that pension and turn it into, you know, a bank account right now, it'd be worth, you know, $1.2 million, something like that. None of those are subject to the capital gains tax. But if instead of doing that, you spent your whole life building a supermarket, your supermarket, it did over $10 million a year, which is really not that much when you're talking about selling food. But you don't make a lot of money doing it. You're not living lavishly. But you get to retirement age, and now, under this bill, you're unlikely to pass it on to your children. You sell it. Hard to say what you get for it, but you're likely to get more than $250,000 for it. And every dollar beyond that is subject to this tax. So we're really picking winners and losers when it comes to retirement planning, Mr. President. And it's not fair. The other thing I wanted to mention on is, as many have mentioned, the study from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Folks love to refer to that because it has Washington State as 50 out of 50 states. But what they don't talk about is the very plain goals of this institute. They're unabashed. Their goal is to institute a very progressive income tax in every state in the union. So it should come as no surprise when you look at their list that the seven states that don't have an income tax are at the bottom. And the seven states with the highest income tax are at the top. They say it at the door. That's what they're about. And yet we just say, well, they say it's bad, so it must be bad. It's not exactly an unbiased viewpoint. So let's look at those top performers in their ranking and the bottom performers, as we like to hear we are in those rankings. When you actually look at the top performers, they have a higher overall tax burden. They have lower economic performance. And here's the real interesting thing, Mr. President. They have millions of people moving out of them. The net migration out of these top performers is in the millions. Now look at the bottom seven, Mr. President. They have a lower overall tax structure. They have better economic performance. And millions of people are moving to them. Now it's hard to say, at least it's hard for me to stand here and think, well, those millions of people moving out of the high tax states into the low tax states are just getting it wrong. They just don't understand, Mr. President. It's hard to stand here with any ounce of humility and come to the conclusion that they all got it wrong and we know better. I would say just the opposite, Mr. President, that this study isn't about trying to find what's best for individual people. It's just at going after one particular policy. Let's talk about something else the study tells us. It tells us this regressivity analysis doesn't apply to the vast majority of Washingtonians. If your income is between $25,000 a year and $250,000 a year, you are almost directly at the national average. You pay 1.1% of your income in some sort of taxes versus the national average of 9.7%. Virtually indistinguishable. So for most Washingtonians, they're not thinking about regressivity because it doesn't affect them. And perhaps, Mr. President, that's the reason they continue to reject the call for an income tax. And what about the folks that are below $25,000, Mr. President? These are people we all care about. We want to make sure they're taken care of, that we help them. All right? I would suggest there's a better way than imposing a brand new unconstitutional tax on the citizens of the state of Washington. You should have a robust safety net. Check. We have that. We have arguably the best in the country. You should have an economy with ample jobs. Check. We have that. And you should stop placing additional taxes on these individuals. We missed the mark on that. In the last few years, Mr. President, we've added a payroll tax. We've added property tax. We've added a gas tax. All these are enormously regressive and affect those people the most. And what are we doing today? We're increasing a tax on folks at the top because they can take it. But we're not doing anything for the folks at the bottom, Mr. President. So finally, Mr. President, this isn't a bill we need. This isn't a tax we need. We know very clearly that we're not going to face cuts in this budget cycle. Our revenues are in good shape. We expect to hear they're even better on the new forecast here in about a week. We know that Congress just passed an enormous stimulus bill that's going to bring additional money to our state. So we don't need the funds. This is just about ideology, Mr. President. And we have to understand that this is not who we are. Washington, as I said earlier, we do things different. And not having an income tax is part of our culture. We don't need one, we don't want one, and we should vote this bill down.
Make no mistake that when they say that only the 1% will pay this, the fact that the 1% that do pay it takes money out of the economy. So every penny that they are raising in revenue does affect somebody, because that's money that is not being invested in private enterprise, new building projects, creating jobs, or when they go out and simply spend the money. You know, I have a friend that is a master woodworker. This guy does projects that people come into his shop, pardon me, and they hand them a picture out of a magazine and say, will you build me this piece of furniture? Will you build me this desk? He does things like $30,000 custom desks. Now, the average person couldn't afford that. But he, Mr. President, is not a multimillionaire. He's the guy at the bottom of the rung. He's a hardworking craftsman, and he makes his money because rich people spend money buying things. So, you know, in 2017, I ran a constitutional amendment to say that we have a constitutional prohibition on an income tax. We got 27 votes out of 49, Mr. President. Fell short of the two-thirds required to pass a constitutional amendment. At the time, the News Tribune said that Senator Fortunato ran a constitutional amendment about a phantom income tax, because no one was talking about an income tax. A phantom income tax, they called it, Mr. President. Well, today, the phantom has finally struck. So when we look at these things, we have to look at not only the impact. When they say this is going to bring in so much revenue, and we're going to do great things with this money that you send us. Mr. President, I would like to say that Give the taxpayers a break and reduce some taxes. You want to talk about tax inequity? Let's talk about tax inequity. But this is not the way to do it. So I urge your support for a no vote on this bill.
Several states have already enacted several or similar taxes, and I'll offer that their experience has been disastrous. You know, and these include states that have been singled out with the highest praise possible by the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy. And that's the source of the claim that Washington's tax system is most regressive. We've already heard today that there are many problems with that study, and the conclusions about it certainly cannot be trusted. And we heard this from the good senator of the 20th district here just moments ago. Now I'd like to tell you about what really happened in three of those states and what their Democratic governors had to say about it. What these states did is very similar to what we're considering today. All three of them have state income taxes. And these taxes are enacted for the very steep upper brackets and puts the emphasis on high earners as an income. And other states collect taxes on capital gains as part of their income taxes. The bill before us today makes the same really big mistake. We would be placing heavy taxes on the income of high earners, and we would be writing budgets that count on that money every year, even though high earner taxes are very unstable and not dependable. So here's what happened in those states. In California, tax revenue tanked after the last recession. Total shortfall of those, of the loss of taxes was over $40 billion. And the state of California had to issue IOUs. Former Governor Jerry Brown said one of the biggest reasons things tanked was his state had depended on those high earner taxes, especially capital gains. Mr. President, I'd like to ask permission to read three quotes today.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. The first quote came from a news conference in January of 2014. Jerry Brown, the governor, stood in front of a chart, and the chart was labeled at the top. It said unpredictable capital gains. And on that chart, of course, I'll offer to you that there were several ups and downs on that chart. It was all over. Governor Brown can be quoted as saying, "What goes up just as sharply goes down. It did it once, it did it again, and now we're not quite sure what it will do. But we know over time that zigzag will follow us. The problem here is that if you make commitments to employees, salaries, to programs that are ongoing, then when the revenue drops, you're in a hole." You know, that shows us why this is a terrible idea to build budgets around high earner taxes. I'd like to offer now a story from Connecticut. That state faced $5 billion shortfall in 2017. Former Governor Daniel Malloy explained that high taxes on the rich weren't the solution, they were the problem. And here's what he said at a news conference in May of 2017. And I quote, "About 1% of the population pays about 30% of the income tax revenue. That is going to make you subject to some pretty big swings. What I have argued for routinely is as broad base for revenue sourcing as possible." This supports the other argument that we've been making, that if we enact high earner taxes, we're going to expect much bigger financial problems in the time of a recession. And the next step will be broader taxes on the entire population to make up that loss. And that's what happened in Connecticut. My third story is about New York State. The state faced a $2.3 billion shortfall in 2019. Governor Andrew Cuomo said that high earner taxes helped create the problem and would only make it worse. And here is his quote. "The top 1% pay about half of all the taxes. This is the flip side. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. The rich leave, and now what do you do? Mr. President, I never thought I would be quoting these leading liberal Democratic governors as an authority on anything. But on this one, I trust them. I know what they're talking about. High earner taxes are not the solution. They are the problem. Yet here in Washington State, supporters of this tax, they're behaving as if we have blinders on and we're simply ignoring what we know has happened in other states. So I urge the body to reject this bill to prevent future disasters as we work on our state budgeting process. And as a freshman senator, this is the biggest vote I can offer up today, but you don't have to take my word for it. You can take it from Jerry Brown and Governor Andrew Cuomo.
I stand in opposition to this bill here today. And as my colleague just said, it's not about Connecticut. It's not about California. It's not about New York. It's about Washington State. And one of our competitive advantages in Washington State was that we had no income tax on capital gains, as is evidenced, or was evidenced, I should say, by the Washington State Department of Commerce website, wherein, up until just about 2 weeks ago, it stated very clearly Washington's competitive advantage, no income tax on capital gains. In order to have a full recovery, in order to take care of those that are very vulnerable, we need to have a vibrant community. We need to have a vibrant state, a vibrant economy. We simply cannot do that when we impose taxes like this.
In listening to the discussion back and forth, and there's nothing in this bill that reduces low-income families or middle-income families' taxes. Not even true. Where do we invest in people by taking from people, Mr. President? And while a lot of the discussion has been around the wealthiest of the wealthy, the problem is it doesn't just impact them, because we really don't. They say we know who those people are, but I'm going to look to my district. And we have a lot of people who maybe at one time or another were able to invest in another piece of property, not their primary residence, Mr. President. But they're good decisions that they made throughout their lives because they wanted to take responsibility for their retirement, for their needs as they age. You know, now could potentially be taken from them in this to pay that they have to pay to the state government instead of taking care of themselves and their families. We know that there's tremendous need in the state, and we know that there are people who are going to need assistance as they age. They're going to need assistance with long-term care and the challenges that life presents us. Away from people potentially that are trying to do right by themselves and their families, and being prudent and doing that for themselves, Mr. President. So you're penalizing those that have done a good job and actually potentially made some money that they're putting towards retirement, towards, you know, long-term care. I can think of my own mother. You know, that's the income she's living on, Mr. President. And she's at that stage of her life where she may need to think about long-term care. So as we think about what we're doing and we think about that this is a tax on the super wealthy, whatever definition that is, you know, what it comes down to is you really bring more people into that, Mr. President. You can't help it because it's not defined. It's defined by income, but you don't know how you bring people unwittingly into that who have worked their entire lives just for that piece of a retirement fund that they can do right by themselves and take care of themselves. Instead of allowing the state to really function and take care of those who can't. So my point here, Mr. President, with this debate today is we're unwittingly taking money from people who may unwittingly now need help from the government when they didn't need it before. And where's the equity in that? Where's the equity in that? You know, just through World War I, income tax was expanded to the middle income tax, you know, during that to pay for World War I. It's not the way it started out. Started out as a wealthy tax. Connecticut, same thing. Now today, it's over half of the state's budget, Mr. President. And they indicated that they needed it to tax, to make that tax on middle-income families because of the volatility and they needed the money. New Jersey's another state done the same thing. And while today, yes, we are debating a tax on the wealthiest, on high-income earners, that's not where this is going to go. And we all know when we do legislation in our chamber here and across the rotunda, that the hardest step of anything initially is the initial step. When it's passed and signed into law, it is so much easier to make it apply elsewhere. And I can guarantee you that it's a lot harder to fix the problems going forward because we don't do a very good job of that once any kind of legislation is instituted. You know, this is going to hurt the families who want to give to their kids. This is going to hurt people who are trying to do right by themselves and prepare for their future throughout their life. And I don't think it's right for the state of Washington to take that from them. I'm proud of the work that we have done to help people who need it. And we will continue to do that in the state of Washington without this bill. Vote this down.
Rising against the bill, which is no surprise to anybody. I was never going to be a yes for this bill, even if we'd hung some of the amendments that would have made it less painful. I wouldn't have been voting for this bill. If we'd have hung the amendment that protected cattle ranchers and dairy farmers and farmers who have other types of livestock, I still wouldn't have voted for it, but we didn't hang that. If we had put in protections so people could pass their hard work on to their family, which we didn't, I'd still have voted against it. If we had built in incentives that would have made it easier for people to donate their hard-earned money to charitable causes, which we didn't, I still wouldn't have voted for it. And even when we narrowed that to incentives that would have helped the disabled, which we didn't accept, I still wouldn't have voted for it. There's lots of reasons to not vote for it. Number one, that we don't need the money right now, although we may soon, based on some of the bills that have passed out of here recently. We've got a spending problem. But that's not my point. There's two points on why I'm voting against this today. Number one, it's unconstitutional. It fails the uniformity clause, and we were sent down here to support and defend the Constitution, not figure out ways to fiddle around it, get around it, or make situations to change it so it suits us. We're down here to support the Constitution, and this is unconstitutional. The second reason is it's not what our constituents want, certainly not what my constituents want. They have defeated an income tax, which I believe this is, 10 times. 10 times the people have said no, not just in my district, the 39th, but in every district that borders me, the 1st, the 5th, the 10th, the 38th, the 40th, the 42nd, the 44th. All of those districts that neighbor me voted down an income tax every time. But my path is pretty clear. I won't be voting for this bill. And I want to just add two points. The idea that there are droves of mega millionaires out there who don't know what to do with their money, they're just begging to be taxed. I find that laughable, that people of that means need us to tell them how to spend their money and they're begging for it. I find that ridiculous. And lastly, I would hope that we look at what we're doing here today at almost 6 o'clock in the People's House with a fence around us on a Saturday. We're passing this bill. And it makes me wonder, we're in here with that fence supposedly protecting us from something. Maybe the guards should be on the other side, considering what we're doing here today. Maybe the people should be protected from us.
This is a disappointing day. Well, I think the reason our side has been so motivated with the amendments and the floor debate is because with this vote, we basically realized that the Senate is no longer what it was. The Senate is no longer a firewall to significant potential tax increases. When I was elected to the Senate, I was a part of the Republican majority, and I was only in the majority for 1 year. But whether it was a thin Republican majority or the still majority coalition or even the tie that followed a year or so later, I think it was a tie. But we as a Senate effectively acted as a backstop for many new taxes and many tax increases. But the political pendulum, as we all know, has been swinging. And now, sadly, we're no longer the backstop. And I think the reason this bill is coming through the Senate is because, you know, we were able to stop some things in the past. And now I anticipate the bill will advance to the House and be signed by the governor. Of course, there will be court challenges and maybe a referendum or whatever. But in court, you know, I think there is a, what makes me nervous is there seems like there's this window of time where our court, our high court, even though there is established precedent for things like this, I really don't know, you know, with the, whether it's the McCleary decision or the Hearst decision or the Sukuma decision on agricultural wages or the recent Blake decision, it does seem to me that the state Supreme Court is sort of asserting itself potentially as a super branch of government. And they want to co-opt many of the legislative branches' policies or ideas about revenue. And even there's been recent anti-tax measures struck down and then other issues on wages. And I just have a lot of concerns. And I think it's not just about the vote today and what it means for the state Senate, but it's what I think is going to transpire over the next couple of years. And, you know, Senator Rivers, we've got a lot of folks offered some really good comments, but I really like what Senator Rivers said. Make no mistake, you know, this today is an income tax, but it's not about the ultra rich. It's about all of us. Because over time, once this gets implemented and once the court potentially upholds it, then all of the exemptions will over time be whittled away to the point where it does impact all of us. And unfortunately, you know, I'll probably be privy to that over the years to see it whittled away if that's the case. So it's really a difficult day, and obviously I'll be voting no, but I think be interesting to see how this all transpires over the next several months and potentially years.
I really didn't intend to speak, and I know we're late in the game today. But Senator Brown, the senator from the 8th, really caught my attention, and I want to speak from a Spokane perspective. Seattle, the Puget Sound area, the I-5 corridor has had a superheated economy for decades. And yet in Spokane, we're just starting to come online the last 4 or 5 years as we've struggled being an inland city that wasn't part of that grand economic expansion that was enjoyed by the Seattle area. When I look at some of the things we've had to overcome in Washington State, they include business and occupation tax and gross revenues. That's really going to attract adventure capital to Washington State. or labor and industry surpluses, sometimes apparently developed on the back of employers, or maybe unemployment benefits that are dramatically more generous than some of the other surrounding states. How about a regulatory structure that's so onerous as to, if you comply with one agency at times, you're violating the rules of another? As Department of Commerce, with their single pitch, pointed out that we don't have an income tax, a state income tax. The last single attraction the business want to cite here, Mr. President, this is Washington State. This is not King County. This is not west of the Cascades. And to be so cavalier as to assume that everybody in the whole state enjoys the economic expansion and the capacity for this type of legislation, I'm lost. I go back about a decade here, and I recall a bit humorously, but not really, when Butch Otter was the governor of Idaho, and he advertised in Spokane media the advantage of moving Washington businesses 15 minutes across the border to Idaho, and gave some justifiable reasons. Decent point might be Buck Knives. He used to be in Washington. Go back even 30 years. Case might be Micron Technologies. It was going to site in Liberty Lake. It's in Boise instead. You know, when I look at the map for the 1098 initiative, it's funny because everybody east of the Cascades had an over 70% rejection rate. Mr. President, I'm from the 6th District. I'm actually embarrassed to say that the 6th District and 3rd District in downtown Spokane simply rejected it by about 65%, a supermajority. So here you have a supermajority that says that they're not interested in this, and we're the low water mark in eastern Washington. For the rest of the state, I want to bring it to the attention of everybody in the Seattle corridor that as we're struggling to come online, these are the kind of things that put that final wooden stake in the heart of business coming to Washington, want to site in Washington. It was a single pitch that we had to bring them here.
As you know, I'm a farmer. We're often portrayed in popular culture and media as not very intelligent. I believe that's because we have a tendency to distill down our problem solving to the lowest common denominator. My father, whom I adored, turned 42 12 days after I was born, and the 16th of this month would have been his 100th birthday. The greatest lesson he left me with was one on integrity. One of his sayings was, "Say what you mean, and mean what you say." So today I have some points I'd like to make. First, as a farmer, I have a long history with capital gains. Capital gains tax is a tax on the gain from the sale of non-inventory assets. The IRS defies capital gains as income. We've had many exclusions to this bill over the last month. It's been well worked. I am reminded of Martin Neumiller's poem and of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's writings. And I have to think that as we exclude more and more and include less, do we not create a group who we have less empathy for? This makes it far easier to justify marginalization of those 9,000. We can disagree on the value of a tax on income. What we cannot ignore is the path that this bill has taken. I will finish as I started, as a farmer and a farm analogy. You see, Mr. President, if it walks, swims, and quacks like a duck, it is a duck, not a chicken, and certainly not the goose that laid the golden egg.
I appreciate all the speeches of my colleagues. They've been very good on both sides of the aisle. And I do come from a district that is anti-tax, as you all know that already. And at one time they voted 75% for $30 car tabs. So you see, my district is not for taxes. And my district is for living within their means, Mr. President. Trying to pass a state income tax, Mr. President, without voter approval and a constitutional amendment to our state constitution is just wrong, has been stated by many other of my colleagues as well. Voters, Mr. President, rejected a state income tax over and over and over and over in the past years, and which has been stated by other of my colleagues as well. Mr. President, small businesses are just trying to keep afloat right now, trying to keep their doors open and trying to keep from going out of business, and many have. And with the state revenues going up, this state tax is wrong policy. Our state, for our state, and it is unconstitutional on its face. Our state needs to start living within its means. And that's what I ran on. That is how I'm going to vote, is always living within our means. We have enough revenue coming in. In the good times, there's always more revenue. In the bad times, everybody is hurting, and we can't be taxing them that time. So I am asking you to reject this policy today and vote no.
So we've heard, certainly heard, some very compelling stories and arguments against this bill today. And I believe that we've clearly made the case. But I'm not sure that that won't be enough to compel our colleagues across the aisle that this is bad for Washington, and it's bad for business, and it's bad for the people, and it's bad for our economy. And we know that because they've told us 10 times. Too bad we don't listen. In fact, 70% of those that came to testify in our committee told us no. I'm disappointed, and frankly, I'm quite offended by a speaker today when she said that small business should feel fortunate that they're doing as well as they are if they have to pay this. They aren't ultra wealthy, and a total misunderstanding of how business works. And I know they won't feel fortunate to have to pay this tax. And you don't know how they are, you don't know how well they're doing. You can actually be losing money and still have to pay this tax. This is not based on how much money you make. Let's be honest here, Mr. President. We know that this capital gains is only the precursor to the structure to implement a full-blown income tax. We've seen that in writing in a few times. And the only way an income tax can be constitutional in this state is if it's uniform, meaning it will be thrust upon everyone equally eventually. If we had a need to create a new tax because we had a deficit and we had programs we're cutting, then it might be justified, maybe, probably not. But we still are in a pandemic. You just don't have to raise taxes when we still have so many people that need jobs and businesses that need to be helped, not kicked when they're down. This tax is a big kick. And there's no less than 20 other tax bills on the table this year, along with this one, that we don't need, and they don't reduce taxes. But that's just not the case, Mr. President. We know because we wrote a budget that balanced for 4 years that didn't cut programs. It invested in our economy. It invested in our families. And we invested in our kids. We were innovative, and we did this all without more taxes. We proved it can be done. I'm proud to stand with my colleagues today who are standing with the taxpayers. We have made every possible argument against this tax today, namely it's unconstitutional, it's an income tax, and people don't want it. But what I can say is that we have heard the people. We are choosing to listen to them, and we will not be voting for this income tax. We just can't do that to them. We can't do this to our businesses. It's just not fair, and it's just not right. We don't need it, and most importantly, and has been stated numerous times today, is unconstitutional. And quite frankly, it's the worst birthday present I've ever had.
Find us online at src.wastateledge.org. Follow us on YouTube and Twitter at WashingtonSRC and on Facebook at Washington Republican Senate Caucus. I'm Tracy Ellis. This is The Elephant in the Dome, the official podcast of the Senate Republican Caucus.